The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Kerry Hilson, Adonis, back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school, like, okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro.
That's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like.
Listen to R&B Money on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Zone Media.
What's up, fool? Where you got those from, me? Hey, sock check, homie. Today, this episode, I don't know if I relate to anything more closer than the narrative of this story. Bukele. Like, hey, el vato, el barrio. This fool, el presidente, el jefe Bukele, andale pues, that fool down to the ground, eh? He out here sock checking, fool, sock check, homie. You don't know what a sock check is. You don't know enough vatos. This is the El Salvador episode about President Bukele, because this is the convergence, the literal convergence of gang life and politics. The parallels in my life. One, the things that I personally experienced, because the origin story of this was here, it's LA. Specifically the part of LA that I was around. Y'all know I talk about all the time, I grew up with vatos. This, I've never felt more equipped to talk about a topic than this one. And even what we're actually gonna talk about later on in the show is like, it was the 90s. Like this was, I've never felt more equipped to talk about this. Anyway, Bukele said, sock check, homie, hood politics. No. You know what? Los políticos de barrio, andale. Okay, buen valido, dámelo. ¿Qué pasó, vato? Hey, Kiki, Cricket, listen, this episode on some Art LeBeau calling hour. Hey, I want to send and dedicate this song to my vato Creeper. Keep your head up. I am your puppet and your baby sad eyes. She will always stay down for you. And then you play the song. I wish y'all knew about the Art LeBeau calling hour. He just passed away. And this white man became such an important part to LA street culture, specifically Latino culture, because he would play like oldies, these like old soul songs. And fools would call in and dedicate songs to like their loved ones. And most of the time it'd be loved ones they had locked up. It's a very LA thing. Rest in peace, Art LeBeau. This episode of Hood Politics, we have to talk about El Salvador and President Bukele. And it's, there is a layer of complication that I want to lay out, but you got to understand the history and the context and why I feel so connected to this. Early 90s, there was a civil war that, newsflash, America played a big role in, having to do with El Salvador had a gentry, wealthy landowners who essentially ran the country and was... the government was just like basically their toys, America played a role in this, which again needs its whole other topic. But all that to say, that started bringing El Salvadorians fleeing El Salvador, some getting exiled, some getting deported, some fleeing to America. And where they came was MacArthur Park. MacArthur Park is, now let me talk gentrified Cali to try to tie this up for you. First of all, MacArthur Park was where the Radiotron existed. Like, if you remember the movies Breakin' and Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo, it was the first like early 80s hip hop spot was at the Radiotron, and the Radiotron was in MacArthur Park. Later on, MacArthur Park, because of, like I said, what was going on in our society, became the hub of the El Salvadorian community. They landed right in the area next to Pico Union, which is right next to Echo Park. And then to the east of them is like downtown LA. Downtown LA has, all my childhood was basically a no man's land. Like it was like Blade Runner over there until LA Live and all that stuff. And then it got all hit. But before that, nobody went to downtown LA. But east of it, but west of it, you know, you would have, like I said, you have MacArthur Park, Wilshire District, Koreatown, all of that was going west. So that's like kind of north of, like I said, I am from originally South Central. This is all north of the 10 freeway separates north and south. And then the 110 freeway separates east and west. So this is northwest of downtown. Now, next to that is Pico Union, which is La M.A. Vato land. North of them is Echo Park. You remember the movie? You probably don't remember the movie, but Mi Vida Loca. Echo Park now is where you could do goat yoga because it's completely gentrified, right next to historic Filipino Town, which was like also, these were gang territories that were already organized, borders were set, everybody knew what it was, cement was settled. The El Salvadorians came here, and the sense, what's so different about, my wife brought this up, what's so different about the Asian, I hate saying it like this, but the Asian experience and the Latino experience is, and my wife has made this mistake before. The more you hang around Asian people, you could tell they don't look alike. Like, and but they all have their same language. They all have different languages. Korean, Japanese, Cantonese, Mandarin. So because Asia wasn't colonized in the way that Central and South America was, they all speak Spanish. Right. So there's a shared, give or take some Portuguese, there's a shared like language among the Latino diaspora, you know, give or take a few indigenous folk, but they all speak Spanish. And you could take the most hardened, the most Aztlan Mexicano, and they can't tell you the difference. They can't look at an El Salvadorian, Costa Rican and look at them and say you can't tell by their look. You can only tell by their accent and when they tell you, unless there are certain telltale signs, there are certain characteristics, certain ways you carry yourself, certain way you understand that are culturally, because these are in fact different countries and different cultures, right? But when they got here, y'all all spoke Spanish. Now, by the time they got here, you have to remember the Mexican-American. First of all, there was such thing as a Mexican man, a Chicano. We done already had Chicano movement. We done had the Zoot Suit riots. We done had the Brown Berets. Like, they have established themselves as a part of America for decades. Because remember, California was Mexico. So they've been here. Now, as far as the street life, these rules are already established. There was already a gang in MacArthur Park. It's 18th Street, Diez y Ocho. Like one of the most notorious street gangs in a world. Now, the difference though between Crips and Bloods and Black gangbanging and the Mexican gangbanging is there's a set hierarchy. Everyone, La M.A. runs it, which is the Mexican mafia, the prison thing. They run the shit. Now, it might be different now, you know what I'm saying? Because not in that life. But the general understanding is no matter what you guys are doing on the streets, everybody pays La M.A. 20% because that's how the product gets here. The coyotes, coming, bringing the weight from Mexico. You tap in with the mafia, the Mexican mafia. They run it. Right when it comes through the jail, they call the shots. There's a hierarchy. You don't kill nobody unless you get the word. It's much more like a mafia. The street war shit is like, of course it happens, of course, because you get hotheads, but like, they not like Crips and Bloods. They have a corporate structure, if you will. And black folks, we bought our drugs from the Mexicans. You bought our drugs from the SAs. From, you know, if you was back east, you say from the Spanish dudes. That's who you bought it from. Paco. Paco got you to wait. When the El Salvadorians got here, there is, you have to remember, among the Latino community, there is a little bit of anti-this and that sentiment among each other. Mexicans traditionally don't really get along with El Salvadorians. As a matter of fact, there's like some prejudice there that like don't really mess with them. They have like derogatory names for Salvadorians, you know, in the same way that, now listen, I'm not saying this sitting on a high horse, in the same way black people have about African, the same way Caribbean people have about Africans, the way Africans have about American black people. Like, we have our own self-hate in a community. They don't necessarily get along. So you got people who were fighting in a civil war in El Salvador against each other. Once they get here, oh, we arm and arm. We all we got. See, that's how the immigrant population work. When you get to a place and you realize like, oh shit, we the only ones that, all we got is us. And you jump into a place that is so racially charged, as is America as a whole, let alone California. And when they got here in the 90s, this is the height when they got here. So you landed in a place that was already violent with an already established rules where even your own raza doesn't, they not even messing with you. So they was like, well, shit, they formed their own hood. MS-13, Maltrucha. So they formed their own gang. And the difference between them, at least from our perspective, or as in black people, the difference between them and like the vatos we were used to, again, they had a code and we was in business together. You stay out of their turf, we stay out of their turf, they stay out of ours. Like, I kid you not, the city I live in now, I never came here. We black people, we were not allowed. And it was understood. This was they hood. You better leave them vatos alone. They take that shit. Like, I was seen as a threat. They took it very serious. I came over here for a few parties and learned quickly, yo, I'm not welcome over here. Only person, black people over here in this city was Will.i.am, because he was born in this part of town. But fam, we didn't come. And as far as like the street stuff, it was just understood. This was they world. We were in business together. How was we supposed to know the difference between a Mexican and an El Salvadorian? Which created an issue. We was in business, but I can't tell the difference. You beefed in jail. Like, the war and shit happened in jail. The turf wars, the street shit had happened. But like, Crips was more worried about other black people. We was more worried about other Crip sets, other Bloods. We was more worried about that. Vatos, you just left them alone. Like, you don't fuck with them. They had their own shit. And whenever we had clashes, it was bad. I mean, bad. Long Beach probably got it the worst. Essentially, we ain't shit to do with that. That's y'all shit. We as in black people. Until it came to business. Because El Salvador figured out, well, for Colombia to get to Mexico, you got to go through El Salvador. And they figured out black people can't tell the difference between us. You insert yourself in a supply chain, all you know is Juan Carlo pulled up with the weight. And then Miguel Rodriguez pull up and he like, I got your weight. You like, what, nigga? I just already bought it. Bought it from who? I don't know, your homeboy, Juan Carlos, nigga, I don't know. So then now Mexicans mad at us because they feel like we cheating. And Trucha just walked off with a couple hundred bands. And now they beefing, they like, and now they mad at the Mexicans. And now that's they thing. We like, I mean, nigga, I don't know. Like, y'all get y'all all the same to us, nigga, racism. But it became a thing. Like, MS-13 and they were so terrifying. Them niggas walked around with machetes. I'm not kidding. Machetes. But that's because yeah, in Central America, that's pretty normal. You know what I'm saying? Like, you cutting down trees, number one. And then number two, like I said, the difference between, I didn't get to this point, but the difference between the two was like I said, the vatos were, they was very organized. They had a corporate way of running things. Salvadorians were brawlers. They were machete. Just the level of, I cannot stress the MS-13. Now, I know there's a lot of like political propaganda, pun intended, all this extras that they be putting on it. Because they doing it because they racist. I'm doing it because I was here. Fam. Maltrucha, MS-13, stay the hell out they way. And 13, different is Soreño, like different than Norteño, which is like, which was Cuartores. It's, oh, they got their rules. Like the Latinos got their rules. It's a little different. But Trucha, MS-13, they had something to prove because it was so few of them. And you stepping into a system that like, there's no work, there's no help. They just realized that like, oh shit, America's racist. You just think I'm, they probably, they've been called, they were called Mexican at probably everywhere they went. You know what I'm saying? So for them, they was like, I mean, what are we supposed to do? And these is kids who was fighting in civil wars. You know, when you come from a war-torn third world country, that's why like, didn't nobody mess with the Cambodians. Didn't nobody mess with them Micronesian, you know what I'm saying? Like when them Asian gangs started coming over here, it was like, nigga, they fight armies. So like their level of violence is so different than ours. Like it's violent, but it's like, oh fam, they used to fight in military. Anyway, Maltrucha, like it was like sword, machete, broad daylight. Like they just were the, I can't overstate how violent they were as a gang. Bad. Okay. Now, what happened next was the great deportation. When the war on drugs and the gang injunction started happening in California, fools started to get deported. Now, we were being, black people was facing mass incarceration. A lot of the Mexicans were facing mass incarceration because we live here. We're, you know, multi-generational. We've been here forever. If you get deported, nigga, you get deported. And they was dropping them El Salvadorians off by the bus back. You think deportation is crazy now? They was rounding them niggas up and sending them home. Them vatos was getting sent home, fool. Andale, pues. And what they did when they got home was exactly what happened with black people when they got sent off to live with their aunties in the South. I'll explain that after this break.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles. podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangster rap. Hosted by MC8 and Big Steels every Thursday, each episode provides an in-depth exploration into the formative artists, monumental albums, and socio-political factors that have shaped gangster rap from its emergence in the 80s to its enduring impact today. Gangster Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form. We dive into the socio-cultural aspects that gangster rap boldly addressed, from police brutality to systemic racism, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the profound cultural significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangster Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. I have very distinct memories of, because I'm old, being on three-way on the phone with, you know, little girls I was trying to holler at and some of the homies, whatever. We would be asking about one of the friends that we just ain't seen in a while. I think I may have told this story before on the show, but like this was a normal interaction where we would be like, anybody seen Andre? What's up with Andre? And Andre went to go spend the summer in Arkansas or Memphis or Atlanta with his auntie, or he had to go live with his grandma. And then he'd have to stay. Why? Because he was getting in trouble. Once you hit age of recruitment out here, your best bet, a lot of families decided they would just send their boys away. Go live with your auntie. It's too violent out here, right? You starting to make bad decisions, man. They gonna like, you gonna go out there, work them fields and really realize what's going on. You get sent to Oklahoma. You get sent to all these hotbeds, OKC, Tulsa, all these cities where before the Great Migration, where we came from. We got sent back to stay with our aunties. Now we would have it also, like the Latino homies, it would be more like they'd have to go work. It would be the middle of the year and they'd have to go to Mexico to work with their grandpa. Then they would be back. You know what I'm saying? But you just had to go work a field and you just had to go back. They needed money. Your thea needs money. So you have to go down there and work. That's just what it was. With us, though, I can say distinctly, purposefully, we were sent off to try to avoid the gang life. And for us out here in Cali, that person would cease to exist. Like they would just fall off the face of the earth. I don't know where they are. It's done. Like you just never think about them again. Like they were gone. And I never connected the dots. Because in Kansas City, there's a neighborhood Crip. There's a rolling 60s gang. There's neighborhood in OKC, in Tulsa. There's Bloods. There's all these neighborhoods. There's all these hoodsters, playboy gangsters, all these 60s, 20s, 40s, all these things that are named after actual streets in California. It's called rolling 60s because they were in the 60th blocks. You know what I'm saying? And then you'd find them and I, for the life of me, could not understand, like, why y'all got gangs named after California streets? Nigga, it's the kids that got sent off when we was in middle school. They just went there and got it cracking and started creating sets in their neighborhood. And they could run. You'd run. You were kings. You came from this place where you learned all the game, everything you needed to do because you had to survive where you were. You just went out there and you just ruled the world. They had it happened on a microcosm in America, in California suburbs. Yo, mama get a house, get a tax return. You move out to the burbs. Oh, you like, oh, I'm finna run this. You know what I'm saying? Until somebody else's family from Long Beach or something, get a tax return. They go out there, and that nigga just as thorough as you are. And like, now we got issues. But it was such a normal occurrence. I remember that there was a documentary in the 90s called Banging in Little Rock. Could not wrap my mind around Little Rock, Arkansas, having gangs. Until at a full-grown adult, I was like, oh yeah, we exported it. We would get sent off, and then they didn't fall off the face of the earth. They lived there and started hoods. I don't know why I never thought about that. That's what happened to El Salvador. They went out there and they got active. And when they got active, you have to remember, they got active without any constraints of any Crips, Bloods, or any other Cholos, like MA 18th Street. Nobody was over there. Florence 13, nobody was there. It was they world. And they world it was. Good God. They went out there sock checking fools left and right. And here's the thing. I'm not even going to explain what a sock check is. Sock check on me. Because if you know, tú sabes, ándale pues. I know how counterintuitive this sounds, but in some ways, when there's no system of checks and balances, even among gang life, you think the violence happens, of course, because of like rivalries and stuff like that. But if there's no system and you can just run the thing, then the lick becomes just the people. Like, you're just the citizens. Because there's no time. The gang wars evolve because somebody is going to be like, well, I don't have to just listen to you, nigga. I live over here. I can make this my neighborhood, right? Somebody else get deported from 5 years later and they start their own set. But before that, it's like the people that live there become your playing field. And they're not inoculated. They don't have the germs. They don't have the white blood cells to be able to inoculate themselves, to defend themselves in any way. Because this isn't the types of diseases they're used to. This gang shit. The gang shit in El Salvador was born in Los Angeles. Like, it's not local grown. It was born in LA. So you don't have the immune system for that. So them fools was running them streets. I mean, running them. Like, I mean, you put LA, Chicago, Atlanta, just wrap it all in one. They was running them streets. It was, bro. Cuz, míralo, ¿sabes qué? Muy mal, just, ándale, like bad. Now, it's funny me doing this because I'm using all like Mexican slang, which is like, I mean, call me on it, of course, but like, bro, it was through channels, like, I thought you won't believe what they saw. Anyway, it was bad. I can relate to the feelings of feeling like this is an open air prison. Like you're held hostage in your own neighborhood. I can personally relate to that. Like rules were very clear. There's parts of neighborhoods you just don't go to. It's grocery stores, directions, walking home. Like you have to walk home a whole other route. There's family members you can't go visit because it's like, you ain't allowed in that hood. Man, y'all think I'm exaggerating. Like, I need to bring somebody else on this show, like who lived through this, that can vouch for what I'm telling you. When I tell you, you could not go to certain areas. It like, you could not go. It's, what do you mean you can't go? It's a free country. I'm allowed to go. Okay, try it. Go ahead, drive over there. See what happens. I personally had family that lived in Compton that I didn't visit until they left Compton. And we weren't allowed over there. And El Salvador was living through this. until this young Gen Z cusp millennial comes and starts sox checking fools. All right. Now we're going to get to the meat of this after this break.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh,
yeah. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed, and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles, a podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangsta rap. Hosted by MC8 and Big Steels every Thursday, each episode provides an in-depth exploration into the formative artists, monumental albums, and socio-political factors that have shaped gangsta rap from its emergence in the 80s to its enduring impact today. Gangsta Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form. We dive into the socio-cultural aspects that gangsta rap boldly addressed, from police brutality to systemic racism, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the profound cultural significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangsta Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go.
All right, we're back. Sock check, homie. The higher the sides, the downer the fool. Fuck a rap, fuck a lame, fuck a bitch ass leva. Never snitch on your homies and respect your hip. I keep it through, cha. All right, anyway. I'm sorry, dog. So, this Gen Z cusp millennial, Naeem Bougele, upper middle class dude, Palestinian immigrant, moves over to El Salvador with his family, gets his start around 30 years old, and he was a publicist, right? So you're talking about a dude, gets on the camera, hat to the back, young, understands social media, knows how to talk that talk, understands TikTok, like just next generation, the guy for now. Decides to get into politics, becomes the mayor of a small town, you know, on the outskirts, eventually becomes the mayor of the capital city, San Salvador, And then runs for president in 2018. And when he runs for president, you got to remember, again, he a young buck. You got this, like, the literal opposite problem of what we got in America. What Jon Stewart say? Man, these two have set the record for being the oldest two people to ever run for president. Only breaking the record by 4 years, set by them 4 years ago. Just did Bugele the opposite. Young buck, right? New blood, understands the world. You know, he was educated in a bilingual school. So he come from, like I said, like not poverty, not wealth, just middle class, upper middle class, educated, you know, and he real slick. And he runs being like, nigga, I'm different. I'm sock checking fools. I'm tired of this shit. Okay. And this is when the story becomes super familiar. Y'all don't know about the New York street sweepers and for Cali, the gang injunctions. And the gang injunctions kind of work like this. Like, you get it. If you was black and brown, you was standing on a corner and it was molding more than one of y'all, it's a gang. If y'all had matching shoes, matching whatever it is, you're in a gang, according to the law. So they would run up on you and, you know, it would move from like loitering again to gang activity. Because what was happening was so intense in LA, like the police, as corrupt as they might have been, or as desperate as the community might have been, if you got swept up, you got swept up. They didn't ask questions. They didn't look. If it was two of y'all, it's a gang. You could be like, dude, we're nerdy as hell. Y'all a gang. If they recognized a jersey, a jersey you were wearing, like if you just happen to be wearing a Dolphins jersey, oh, that's 13th Street. You know what I'm saying? Like, or that's 12th Street. Like you down there in Pomona, like you know what I'm saying? Like you was with them. You feel me? Like no matter what, a tattoo, a street name, whatever it is, if it was something that they could recognize as a gang thing, no questions asked, you getting swept up, you going into the paddy wagon, right? It was the gang injunctions, right? You would get a gang uptick. Like, for example, if, let's just say, you know, you did breaking and entering, just some sort of like, or some sort of petty crime, like you Grand Theft Auto, whatever the case may be, right? You was just joyriding. If they could tie you to a known gang, that crime would get what's called a gang uptick, meaning it's an extra five, or the act becomes a felony. A misdemeanor can become a felony because of the gang uptick, right? A lot of times, what would happen is kids would just be regular ass kids, you know what I'm saying? Maybe committing, you know, petty crimes here and there, just trying to be cool with the homies. You go to jail, you go to juvie, and you join the gang in juvie, right? So it created a bigger problem. You understand what I'm saying? In New York, they would have the street sweepers. Again, like if you were standing outside and it was more than y'all, everybody getting swept up. I'm not asking no questions. We are cleaning up our streets. Now, that was us as black and brown boys being the victims of this. On the other hand, we were also victims of the violence. I said it so many times, and I'm going to say it again in this episode. I cannot stress enough how wild the streets were then. Like, we were held hostage. Like, in a lot of ways, I could say we were both, I said it on the song Gentrify on my own record, we were both guilty and victims. Like, because the roving hordes of violent youth that was holding us hostage were us. They were our friends. Those were our cousins. And a part of it was because you needed protection from the other roving violent hordes of dudes. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was us. It's complicated. So the old ladies who can't go to their neighborhood liquor store, you understand what I'm saying? The people that was causing that problem was they sons, was they grandchildren, or they friends' grandchildren. So if you came home and you was just like, mijo, I can't even go to the store no more, fools will be like, somebody tell yo, Y'all, well, like, your grandma telling you she getting sweated at the store? Oh, nigga, it's up. You not finna sweat my... Oh, so it's like we were held hostage. You don't go to the police because they just another gang. Like I said, they sweeping us up and throwing us in the jail. They not asking questions. Bugele ran on this idea that, like, El Salvador, you're under... And in a lot of ways, it's true. You're under an occupation. The occupation is just these fiefdoms of gangs. Y'all under occupation. He like, I'm gonna clean this shit up. I'm not asking questions. You can't play games with these people. You have to demoralize them. And as the people of El Salvador, they like, I'm tired of this shit. You right. Like, we're tired of this. This man know how to talk. He young. He dead sexy, and he talked that talk. He like, I'm not afraid of y'all gangsters. I'm gangster too, nigga. Like, I'm with the shits. You need to hire somebody. You need to elect somebody that's with the shits. And with the shits, he was. And within 2 years, this man absolutely decimated. I'm talking about the fact that, like, you know how, like, we talk about, like, the mob and the Sopranos and shit like that, how it's like, this is nothing like it used to be. Of course, it exists in... Of course, the mob exists, but not like it did. The mob got decimated. Like, well, I'm talking that. He absolutely destroyed the El Salvador. And a lot of times, look, on once, this is why this is a hood politics episode. Because on one side of this, on one side of the coin, you're like, good. Nigga, we're free, man. Fuck y'all. Out here extorting our grandmas, like killing your own people, dividing this city up, man. We held hostage. Like, nah, man, I got no love for y'all. You know what I'm saying? Like, you pointing at people like, I done lost friends, family, cousins, sisters, brothers. You understand what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to open a stupid little panaderia, right? You understand what I'm saying? You taking 60% of my, like, nah, I got no, it's no love loss. He would have them boys like, look, like, dehumanizing them. And the attitude is, well, they dehumanized us. Have them lined up in the jail in their drawers, tied up one by one, being like, look, now who the G? Now who the Don? You laying out here in your drawers, you trying to like, nah, fam, we not playing this shit no more. Y'all are done. Fuck you and what you going through. You know what I'm saying? Fuck your dead homies. Like, I don't give a shit about none of y'all. Y'all been terrorizing us too long. I'm done. And on one hand, it's like, nigga, finally. Right? In some senses, like, look, I'm a slap a Nazi in the face type dude. Like, I get it. Sometimes you gotta shut this shit down. You feel me? And the only way to talk to somebody that's violent is with violence. I get it. I'm not a pacifist. And how do you respond to people that got no code? You like, are you worried about the moral high ground? Like, is that really what we worried about? It's like, niggas is dying in the streets. I'm tired of this shit. Y'all killing each other and we're dying too. Like, it'd be one thing if it was just y'all shooting at each other. But even if it's y'all is us. These are our sons. These are our daughters. You're so saying so like, there's no separation between them and us. They are us. But this shit needs to stop, bro. And he was like, give me 2 years. And he did it. Now, on the other hand, the question is about how. And again, that's why I relate to it. Dudes would get wrapped up with no due process. And like with the, you could, whether you was involved, affiliated or not, they're like, we'll sort them out later. So it's stories all over El Salvador of people being like, I haven't seen my nephew ever since the cops picked him up. They just make up charges and they hold him without due process. They're not telling them what's going on. And if you just get caught up, you get caught up, whether you have an affiliation or not, it don't matter. They're like, we'll figure it out later. When you're cleaning the streets, with a power, with a super soaker. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're just getting the biggest net possible and just swooping everybody out of the streets and being like, look, it's clean. And if you get caught up, you get caught up. He has not shown any concern in whether somebody gets accidentally swooped up into this or not. You shouldn't have been over there. That's the attitude. You shouldn't have been outside. And even if you're not involved, I know you know somebody that's involved. Your brother involved, your cousin involved. It's impossible. It's and that is another thing that I get. If you swept me up, I don't gangbang at all. I'm not affiliated at all. Matter of fact, I'm running from these niggas. But if you swept me up and asked me if I know actively, I'm like, well, absolutely. Of course I do. Listen, these were the rules. If you get swept up, let's just say you get involved, you know, they got your little tattoos on file because that's what they do to take pictures of your tattoos. They see you got a tattoo that matches some other stuff. Now you involved in that hood, right? Let's just say you get out on probation or you out on parole. Part of the rules for your probation or your parole is you cannot associate with any known gang activity, any known gang affiliates. The problem is you're sending me back to my house. And you're like, well, it's my father. It's known gang. My physical brother, like my first cousin, my auntie, like I live at the kickback. So even if I'm trying, this is just where I live. Even if I don't want to be a part of this, it's just where I live. I don't know what I'm supposed to say. If the popo see you, let's say they run a raid or they pull somebody over, whatever, in your neighborhood, they see you over there. You done broke your probation rules. Now you going back. It's people in El Salvador that feel like we don't know if this solution is worth the squeeze, if the juice is worth the squeeze. It's like you have a rodent problem and the solution that the exterminator brings is a bomb. He's like, well, I killed all the rodents. And it's like, but you blew up the house. Well, all my plants are dead too. And so is our pet. Like you, and they're like, but the rodents are gone. What do you say to that? Well, you know what El Salvador said is it's the cost to play because they reelected him. And when you do people a favor like that, especially if you're not afraid of taking the blowbacks, it's like I said, it's family members that still ain't seen their family members. It's been 3 years. They just swooped them up and they're like, he in jail now. No court case, no charge. It's just you a part of the gang. It's like, nigga, no, I'm not. Yes, you are. There's cases like that all over El Salvador. So then the people believe in you. And what do you do this for? I did this for the South. I did it for the hood. I did it for El Salvador. You could declare a sort of martial law in a way that says, you want me to clean these streets up? You got to let me not worry about y'all's human and individual rights right now. And some of the pushback with this bro is like, that's a creep towards fascism. Because you're getting the job done for the fatherland at all costs. And what y'all gonna say? I cleaned your streets up. You wanna go back? You ain't like my ways? My ways worked. And I mean, why would you say anything to him if you know that you can get caught up in his dragnet and that's it? I mean, that was the LAPD for us. Look, you get caught up, you get caught up. You know, and of course we fought back against police brutality and stuff like that. But now granted, this isn't, Los Angeles is not the nation of El Salvador. It's not necessarily one-to-one, but what I'm saying is I understand the complications. I have no love for the beast, of course. But I will tell you this. I currently live in a part of town I wasn't allowed to even visit. That's kind of nice. So we'll see. Either way, Ugele said, fuck a rap, fuck a name, fuck a bitch ass leva. Los políticos de la barrios. A ver. All right, now don't you hit stop on this pod. You better listen to these credits. I need you to finish this thing so I can get the download numbers, okay? So don't stop it yet. But listen, this was recorded in East Los Boyle Heights by your boy Propaganda. Tap in with me at prophiphop.com. If you're into cold brew coffee, we got Terraform Cold Brew. You can go there.com and use promo code HOOD, get 20% off, get yourself some coffee. This was mixed, edited, and mastered by your boy Matt Osowski, killing the beat softly. Check out his website, mattosowski.com. I'ma spell it for you because I know. MattOsowski.com. MattOsowski.com. He got more music and stuff like that on there. So go and check out the heat. Hood Politics is a member of Cool Zone Media, executive produced by Sophie Lichterman, part of the iHeartMedia Podcast Network. Your theme music and scoring is also by the one and only Matt Osowski, still killing the beat softly. So listen, don't let nobody lie to you. If you understand urban living, you understand politics. These people is not smarter than you. We'll see y'all next week.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Kerry Hilson, Adonis, back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school like, okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro.
That's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like.
Listen to R&B Money on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.